Hello, welcome to this week's Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm David Fraser, and I'm alongside our chief Norwich City correspondent, Paddy Davitt, and the father of all things Pinken.com, Peter Raven. Unfortunately, we are going to have to look back on Easter Monday, boys. We can't avoid it. 4-1 defeat at QPR. Pete, I know you didn't go, but what did you make of the general vibe of the reaction to it? Were you a bit surprised at quite how disgusted people were by the result?
Not at all. It's, you're losing 4-1 to, I think I read during the game, it's the sixth home win for Ian Holloway's side against Norwich City, and the man's a clown. So
to lose 4-1, don't sugarcoat it, Pete.
Yeah, and having watched the highlights, I'm not sure where they got four and a half minutes from. I guess there's a lot of replays. It was just awful defending for all four goals, and I don't know what you boys thought of the rest of the games. I've only seen the action in terms of the goals. So was it just as dire as it looked, or
it certainly was second half, wasn't it, Pat? I mean, first 40 minutes, it wasn't a great game, really. It was fairly level pegging, wasn't it? And yeah, then it all chaos just kicked off, really, didn't it?
It did, but the worrying thing for me was it, and I've said this a few times, apologies on various platforms since, but it was Millwall in the sense of basically all QPR had to offer was a very physical threat channelled through the big boy Smith up top, much like when Norwich went to the Den back in August, that it was Morrison and Gregory, and it was different personnel that day. It was Martin and Franca, who coincidentally never played, I think, again in the Norwich first team this season. Such was the watershed moment there, and we had another one on Easter Monday, because albeit Hanley was playing alongside Zimmerman, they were just had no idea how to cope with balls banged in, you know, diagonal, big diagonal balls. Angus Gunn obviously culpable for the second goal. Just very worrying in the context of what they're trying to do and what we keep getting told they're trying to do, and it's all about building for next season. Well, that really looked like a set of players who maybe have decided they're going to knock off, and within that there's so many subplots, you know, lads who aren't going to be here, and it'll be on their terms because they're going elsewhere, or lads who, for Norwich's side of the fence, aren't going to be involved as well. And it's just, it feels a little bit, instead of it being supposedly a new era and a bold, fresh direction, it feels a bit stale at the minute.
Hmm. Do you think it's difficult for Daniel to keep them motivated at this point then, Pete? It's that stage of the season where so many reporters and fans up and down the country start talking about players being on the beach, and obviously every season there has to be teams stuck in the middle of the table. But you know, you've got this Saturday, you've got Villa at home, and then you've got Sunderland away, who are obviously fighting for their lives. How difficult a job do you think it's going to be for Daniel to get some decent results from this end of the season?
I think Norwich fans aren't really used to a season being over quite so soon, as either involved in promotion or relegation battle. But you'd hope that the players being professionals, and there are going to be a fair few of them here next season, that they should be thinking about, yeah, I'm going to play to be starting 11 next season. So, and you shouldn't have to motivate a team, even if they are mid-table. It's their job. Yeah. Like I know Pinto was fairly angry afterwards, but they should want to go out each week and win. It should be in their mentality to win every game. Mm. And it's just like you say, they seem to have just given up.
Okay, well, we won't go through all the goals again, but just to mention, Angus Gunn obviously didn't have his best game, and you spoke to Daniel about that afterwards, and I think most people can forgive Angus that, really, can't they, given how consistent he's been this season?
Yeah, all day long. It probably felt more magnified because it is such a rare aberration, because he has been, you know, I mean, it's almost, you're surprised now that he would have thrown in an error on that scale, because we haven't seen that at all this season. And we all know now that, you know, that there's a guy who at the start of the season hadn't played one minute of professional football, and yet he now looked so comfortable. But even then, I mean, is it a case now, I'm not, you know, questioning his professionalism at all, but is there an element that, well, he knows he's going back to Man City, his time's nearly done here, and that just that absolute focus isn't quite there, and it's not just him we're talking about here, all the players, you know. You know, we know Maddison is very unlikely he's going to be here beyond the summer. Is he now thinking about what's ahead at the summer? And all it takes is a little percent here or there to be off in terms of the focus and the actual buying into what they're all trying to do. You know, you can contrast that performance with the backs to the wall efforts at Brentford or Middlesbrough or Derby or Wolves, you know, all the really stirring kind of performances this season. And the massive difference for me was the intensity levels. You know, the players on Monday, it looked like once a second went in, it was easier just to cave in, which in those other games I've referenced, you didn't see that at all. You basically saw them roll their sleeves up and dig in and look to hold on to results. So it is difficult, really, now, I think, for Daniel to sort of arrest that. I think it is very much, you know, it's almost you put it onto the individuals. And that, as Pete referenced and you spoke to him after the game, Pinto was very strident in that, irrespective of the league table or materially having nothing to play for, you know, it's the badge, it's the honour of playing for that club and this city and the county. And you just hope personal responsibility / pride of the individual players is enough to galvanise them to produce better than what we're seeing at the minute. I mean, it's not just Easter Monday. Easter Monday was poor, but it's 1-10. And, you know, that trend continues into the end of the season, then it's going to be, I think, a very challenging summer. And one thing for certain, Pete might go back to Pete on this, is that there won't be a lot of leeway for them at the start of next season if they've basically limped into the end of this season. You know, it'll be very much, if you don't hit the ground running, I think you'll see that frustration beginning to well even more than it is at the minute.
Yeah, go along with that, Pete. You think this is threatening to have an effect on next year?
I think he's got a little bit of leeway in the sense that fans know that big players are leaving in the summer and they know they won't be replaced. We know all about the financial situation. But, yeah, you're given 4 or 5 games like what we've been served up recently. I mean, Fulham was only last week and I can't tell you what happened in that game. So the amount of people that just... People just now turning up, a lot of people now turning up just because they've paid for their ticket, paid for their season ticket, and it's out of just routine more than anything else. It's just so dire to watch, and the effort doesn't seem to be there either. I mean, fans can forgive the players if they put the effort in and still lose, but if that carries on next season, I can't see it before the fans will turn and be fairly quickly. I know they're still trying to buy into this whole weather revolution thing, and it's going to be a lot of change, and you've got to be patient, but football fans aren't.
Well, at the end of the day, you go to football to see goals scored, don't you?
Yeah.
And what, averaging a goal a game this season obviously isn't good enough. No one at the club's going to hide from that, I wouldn't have thought. But I think it's 6 wins in 20 home games as well, and that's hard to keep your loyal punters happy at that rate. So,
well, if it carries on, we can just go and watch another club, can't we?
Well, I think we covered that quite an extent, and we also did a Facebook Live on Wednesday night, myself, Paddy, and Chris Lakey. So to cover the Stuart Webber issue, we won't look back too much more, but go and check that out. That's on our Facebook page, YouTube channel, pinken.com. But for now, we'll park all that 2-0 defeat to Fulham and the 4-1 loss to QPR. Here are those quotes from Ivo Pinto after the QPR game, and then we'll start looking ahead to Saturday's game against Villa and those final 6 games. Ivo, how was the dressing room? Was it an angry dressing room? Disappointed? How does this group of players tend to react to results like this?
I think a mixed. As you can imagine, it's a hard result to take. Disappointed mostly, but angry as well.
Okay. In terms, you guys often talk a lot about wanting to sort of keep a level heads in defeat and when you win, you know, sort of the equilibrium. I think I remember Russell Martin using that word a few sort of seasons ago. Is that difficult when there's not necessarily anything to play for? You know, as Phil put it, no promotions are very unlikely, and relegation isn't going to happen. Is it difficult to keep a level head?
No, as I said, we carry a heavy shirt, a big shirt, and. If for nothing more, we have to fight for this shirt. We have to show that we deserve to wear this shirt and to be playing for this big club. So if we already gave up because we are not getting promoted or because we are not going down, it's our fault, it's our mistake, because we just need to respect the club and this shirt. If we don't do that, then I don't know what we are doing here. If any player is thinking like that, then it's not good enough.
And as captain, do you, in these sort of situations when things are bad, do you like to do anything to sort of G your teammates up or anything like that? Do you sort of take that role very, well, obviously you take it seriously, but is there anything in particular that you do to try and pick the boys up?
Yeah, we need, as I said, if we want a better ending of the season, we need to change things. So as I said, tomorrow we need to discuss what happened here, and yeah, because as I said, it was not good enough. This can't happen, especially after the first 40 minutes or something like that. So yeah, we just need to. I don't think this is the right moment to talk between the players, but I think tomorrow we should stop, we should breathe and think about it, because as I said, we need to show that we deserve to wear this shirt, because this is a big club, and if we're not fighting for this shirt, then this is not the way, and this must stop. And if that doesn't hurt people, then we need to rethink with what we want for our life and for our jobs.
Thanks for your time, Ivo. Appreciate you answering the question. Okay, boys, Villa on Saturday. This is not going to be easy, is it? They've sold out their allocation, 2,000 fans. They are clearly still in with a shout of the top two. I think they're 7 points off second place. They're 11th from seventh, so they're pretty much safe of the playoffs. But if they can win this, I think Cardiff and Wolves also play this weekend, don't they? So they are really in the race for the top two if they can get a result this weekend.
Yeah, you have to say, sat here a day or two out, it feels like it could be a Fulham type of situation again, where, you know, Norwich, you feel clearly, irrespective of the no-show in the second half at QPR, you would expect them to be better, certainly in front of their own fans. And but even that, you fear, won't be good enough, and that Villa will just have another gear or two to go through, and that'll be it. And we'll be sat here talking again about the gulf between a club who are at the top end and equipped to really challenge at the top end and a squad at the minute who are nowhere near that. So, it could potentially be another disappointing affair for Pete and his fellow season ticket holders at Carrow to stomach, I'm afraid, because, as you say, you look at the two clubs, you look at what's at stake, and we've talked and touched on it there before the Pinto quotes about the motivation levels and you know, what materially is there for Norwich's players to sort of really sharpen the focus. Now, conversely, Villa have got it all to play for, and, you know, you can see them being highly motivated, and, I really can't, at this stage, see a scenario other than maybe what we saw on Good Friday with Fulham. I think basically they'll come up against the side who have better players than them and are more motivated.
Well, they beat Wolves 4-1 a few weeks ago, didn't they? I know it's a derby game. Perhaps league form goes out of the window to a certain extent, but they've been so good this season that that's an impressive result. Had a little bit of a wobble after that. I don't know whether this paints Norwich's QPR result any different, but they did lose 3-1 at QPR. So, you know, maybe not quite so bad for Norwich, although for those of you who were there, it was quite different. The 4-2 defeat at Villa Park in August, you were there, Pad, weren't you? I missed it. I think I was at a wedding. Pete, were you at that one?
Definitely wasn't at Villa Park.
No. So what do you recall from that one, Pad? Conor Hourihan hat-trick, wasn't it? And the lad, Andre Green, who I seem to remember being described as being unplayable on the day, scoring his first senior goal, and then, of course, hasn't scored any more goals this season.
Yeah, you say that with barely a trace of non-sarcasm, but now you've said that, I do recall it was Zimmerman, I think, who he had over, and that was just two or three days after Zimmerman had, what was that midweek game down here, where he basically spent, it was a midweek, and he literally didn't return to the change rooms for about an hour because he was too busy high-fiving punters in the lower Barkley. It might have been QPR, actually.
I've got the team here, actually. Angus was obviously in goal, Russell Martin was at right back, Zimmerman and Frank are in the centre, Husband left back, and then I think it was a 4-3-3 of Reid, Vrančić, Stieperman in midfield, Naismith, Jerome and Murphy up front. So yeah, it's changed a fair bit from then, hasn't it?
And talking to bring it full circle on Gunn, if it wasn't for Gunn that day, there would have been four adrift at the break, because Villa were basically head and shoulders above Norwich as an attacking force. Again, that was in that really uncertain period where Daniel was clearly wanting to play a certain style of play with a certain type of player, and they were just far too open. And obviously then his pragmatic side came in and Alex Tettey came back into the side, but which is why I think, because Alex didn't feature at Loftus Road on Monday, we'll definitely see him back for Saturday. But Yeah, I'm not sure you can read too much into that game because it was so early in the season, and you know, Villa are obviously slightly different personnel, as are Norwich. But yeah, no, if put it this way, if Norwich were as poor this Saturday as they were in the first half at Villa Park, then I think Pete's timeline might be getting brought forward by about 6 months because they will definitely tell them, I would imagine, because they were poor that day at Villa Park.
Can you hold out any hope then, Pete? I mean, Villa Saturday, Sunderland Tuesday, away from home, they're fighting for their lives, and then Cardiff come here and presumably they could seal promotion potentially here. Okay, I suppose there's always a championship team with nothing to play for who upsets things, so is that the only hope really?
Well, that's, I think it's about, it might be 12 months to the day when we put 7 past Reading, who then ended up playoff losers, so you would hope that pressure's off and they might play a little, but we could have said the same thing before Fulham. So yeah, those next 3 games are 0 points.
0 points. I guess it comes down to the team that Daniel can put out. I mean, if Leitner and Tribal were fit, then maybe there'd be a few hopes. How important do you think Hernandez being fit is going to be to that? I mean, we don't know yet ahead of the press conference, but if you had him and Josh either side of Srebeni again, like during the Reading game, would you have a bit more hope?
Yeah, because I mean, just before his injury, he was playing really well, and Farke seemed to hit onto his 3 at the back that looked a bit solid, and then I know QPR he went 4, so it's, that chopping and changing doesn't help anyone. But yeah, if Hernandez is fit, then there might be a bit more hope. You might actually see a bit more action in the right goal mouth this time. So,
okay.
But I still don't think, I think Villa will be, just like Fulham, they'll just be too strong. They've got that second place to go for, like you say, top two are playing each other.
Yeah.
So they're going to gain on one of them. So
I've got some stats for you, and it doesn't make nice reading, I'm afraid, but I'm going to rattle through them. They scored 64 goals in 40 games, and only Fulham and Wolves scored more. They've conceded 37 in those 40 games. Only Cardiff and Wolves have conceded fewer. In case certain Tracy Bagshaw is listening to correct us, our old sub-editor chum. Robert Snodgrass, of course, former Norwich player, got a few Canaries links. He's got 14 assists this season and 7 goals. Albert Adoma, 14 goals, 5 assists. Conor Hourihan, 10 goals, 2 assists. And then you look beyond them, they've got Scott Hogan, Jack Grealish, Millie Jedinak, Lewis Graben, former Norwich. Henry Lansbury isn't even in the team for them. Jonathan Codger is out injured. Sam Johnston, the goalkeeper, on loan from Manchester United. That is strength in depth, Pad. And another piece that we've done this week is on the agents' fees, isn't it? Norwich spent $1 million less, spent 7th most in the division, about $2 million, but Villa spent over $5 million. And we're talking about Norwich trying to be a self-funding club here, and realistically, a second-tier club in size. Villa should be in the Premier League, shouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, all day long. Just mismanagement, why they dropped out, really. Went very stale. Former manager from this neck of the woods, partly responsible, must be said. And yeah, you think a club of that scale, both in terms of the infrastructure, the playing staff that you've reeled off there, Dave, the fan base they can get there, it really shouldn't take much to be steered in the right direction. And of course, Steve Bruce has got numerous championship promotions on his CV. So yeah, it's no surprise to see him up there, and really, with that type of outlay you touched on, then I'm afraid the Premier League is the bare minimum they should be aiming for. No two ways about it.
31,500 average attendance this year, only Leeds average more. So big club, clearly. And I mean, the playoffs are going to be pretty tasty, to be honest. Whoever misses out, I mean, a Fulham Villa final would be a decent watch, I think. One good bit of news. I mean, he so often has been the man to provide it this season, James Maddison. He's been named in the Championship Team of the Year alongside John Terry and Albert Adoma and John Ruddy, who, of course, left Norwich for Wolves last summer. He's also nominated for the Championship's Young Player of the Season. Pleased to see that he's getting that sort of recognition, Pete? Or are Norwich fans even starting to think of pound signs in their own heads when it comes to Maddison?
Well, I mean, that can only help bump up the price, because there won't be one Norwich fan that expects him to be here next year unless he goes to a big club and it's a season-long loan back. But I don't think that'll be an option. But yeah, it'd be daft if he wasn't in that Team of the Year or up for Young Player of the Year. So, and I know he's got stiff competition, but for him to be recognised in a team that's done nothing all season, it's all on him, isn't it?
Impressive, yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot here, something that's just popped into my head, but in terms of academy products, the good, the really good ones we've seen over the years, your Bellamy's, your Edie's, where do you think Madison ranks? When once he's gone and he's kicked on, do you think he's going to hit the sort of levels that, that they did? And obviously injury stopped Darren in his track to a certain extent, but he was on his way to being a big name, like Bellamy ended up being as well. Do you think he's going to be in that class?
He's definitely a future England star. Whether he'll get to the heights of Bellamy, I don't know. That's a big name to put him up there with, and I'm sure he'd be more than happy to. And Paddy's followed his career more than anyone else.
I was just waiting. Boy. I was going to come in and say, all this academy, James Maddison, we all know that he's a, he's a Coventry product, born and bred.
That's a fair point.
And Coventry will be hoping for a nice little sell-on fee, I'm sure, this summer, given their financial turmoil. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, Pete and you, for that matter, Dave, have seen those lads you've referenced before, but the way he's going and what I like, he's clearly a talented boy, but his temperament and his character, he's such a mature lad for his age when you speak to him as well. And it's now just popped into my head that after January, when we spoke to Weber about Madison, he said, look, he's got a fantastic agent and a good family around him, so that they won't get carried away and they will not just jump to the first bidder or the first suitor. It will have to be right for him and his career and in terms of his development. So it sounds like he's got all the support network he needs, as long with the talent and the temperament to go as far as his ability will allow.
Well, that's what a Coventry upbringing does for you, isn't it, Mr. Davitt?
Yeah, but it'll always be the second best thing out of Coventry, has to be said.
Right.
That won't change.
What's the first?
Move on.
Wow. But I mean, yeah, with his development, if he goes to a club like Liverpool and Chelsea, he's not going to start, is he? No. So.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. I mean, if I was Tottenham, I'd be looking at him as somebody who they could bring through next season as a potential successor for Eriksen and Ali. I mean, they could even lose Eriksen this summer, couldn't they? But if Ali was to get one of these big moves that's been talked about, I think that would be the ideal club for him. And if that meant that, you know, at some point he comes back for one half of the season here, then great. But equally, if you're a Tottenham or a Liverpool, you could probably put him on loan to one of the lower Prem clubs, couldn't you? A Palace or a Burnley. Well, they're not even a low half club, are they, to be fair to Burnley? Wolves, if they go up. Yeah, well, any of those clubs would happily have him, I would have thought. So, you know, you think of Tammy Abraham at Chelsea. Yeah. We've seen plenty of those examples. So whatever happens in those terms, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? You know, what is it, 13 goals, 7 games, and I'm pleased to see he's in that team of the year. Whatever happens on Saturday against Villa, there might be an opportunity for Norwich fans to enjoy this weekend to a certain extent, because everyone's second team this season, Shrewsbury, are at Wembley. Checker trade final against Lincoln City. I'm pretty certain it's on Sky, 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. There's a bit on Pinkin.com now, Ben Godfrey talking about it, and from what I hear, he's been playing really, really well at the moment. Morris is a little bit on the fringes, but still supposedly highly appreciated for the work that he does for the team. Ben Godfrey and Carlton Morris, we've spoken about them a lot, Pad. Do you think both of them are going to be involved here next pre-season, or is only Godfrey the one who's sort of nailed on as we sit here today?
Well, as we sit here today, you would say yes. Godfrey is the one who, come the opening league game of next season, you would expect of those two to be in the 11. But, I mean, if we'd have sat here 12 months hence, we wouldn't have been talking about Jamal Lewis at all. So it's really for Carlton to when he does come back to impress. And I think Daniel's shown beyond doubt now that if these guys impress him, then they'll get their opportunity. Then they've got to take it. Jamal's done that clearly. We touched again on this on the Facebook Live / the YouTube chat we did on Wednesday night. But I think going into the transfer window this summer, it's absolutely imperative. It's been shown beyond doubt that they haven't got the goal power they need, proven goal-scoring ability week in and week out. They need to address that, and I don't think Carlton Morris would be the answer there. He could be in the mix by all means, but I don't think, I'd put Srebeny in that category as well. You know, he might come good, but he's not proven, and now that's a completely different debate in terms of where they're going to finance a deal of that nature, because the reality is to get a proven Championship goal scorer is going to cost a few quid. But I think it's reached a point now. We started this chat by saying 42 goals is it in 40 games. You know, it's not just they have to be creative, they've got no choice. They need to bring in goals to the top end of the pitch, because if they don't, then we'll be sat here this time next season talking about, you know, will they be able to get in the mix the following season? So that's the most intriguing element to the whole summer mix for me. Yeah, okay, Maddison will probably move on and there'll be movement around the squad as well, but can they find goals? Because if they don't, then I fear we're going to be maybe reporting on a similar season to this one.
Will you be watching on Sunday, Pete?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
it would be better than what we've put up with at Carrow Road. So it's Lincoln, isn't it?
Lincoln. Yeah, yeah. I've seen them a couple of times this season, and they're a strong side. To be fair, I mean, yeah. Shrewsbury have done brilliantly, haven't they? But Lincoln are really solid under Danny Cowley. Are you intrigued to see what Godfrey can offer? I think most of us watched the West Ham game in the cup earlier in the year, didn't we?
Yeah, because like you say, these players are going to come back into it. And what's the situation with Thompson?
Not going to see him this season. No. Very serious injury, that's the thing, isn't it? He's kind of been out for nearly 2 years. So, personally, I would have thought we're looking at a loan before he gets near the Norwich first team again. And if he can even recover and have a career, then that's going to be great because it's very serious. But he was looking really good, wasn't he, before he got injured?
Yeah. But I guess you've got Tribal, and who knows, if we do actually buy Leitner, then it's midfield covered, isn't it? Mm. Imagine Tetti will leave. But I guess we can expect a few more kids to come through just because of finances.
Yeah, Todd Cantwell's probably going to be one of them. He was doing well for Tunis Sittard in Holland, but it looks like he's had a bit of a hamstring injury, missed a few games for them. So, there's going to be certainly going to be an injection of youth one way or the other next year. And another guy who looks like he's well up for coming into the squad as well as Kenny McLean, and we spoke a little bit about him on the video, didn't we? And he's really turned it on for Aberdeen since his move to Norwich is confirmed. And there were some good quotes which you turned around for Pinkin.com earlier today, weren't there, Pad?
Yeah, no, I like his bullishness. Apart from anything else, you know, there's no we'll go down to Norwich in the summer and look to impress and catch the eye. I'm going down there now with a view to being in the 11 from day one, and it's good that he backs his ability. That's an interesting one now, because as you say, he is catching the eye at Aberdeen, but it's hard to measure the levels. But then that's where Maddison was last season and kicked on, didn't he, in a loan spell. And they are, in terms of the Scottish setup, you know, they're pushing, well, they're sort of leading the pack after Celtic. So, you know, and he's a key man in that side. So let's hope that's a very astute piece of business, because, you know, I think it was reported to be around £200,000. If they've got a guy who can come in and, on the assumption that Maddison departs, if he can come in and chip in anywhere near that in terms of goals and assists, then that's going to be very good business.
Yeah, looking at their highlights in midweek, I can't remember who it was they beat. They beat 2-0 Motherwell, and he delivered the corner for the first, and then he scored with a nice finish from sort of just inside the box for the second, didn't he, low with his left foot. So one thing with a guy coming from Scotland, as Maddison showed, is that you're going to be used to the sort of rough and tumble, so that's not going to be a problem. The midfield is potentially taking shape, as you say, Pete. One thing that does concern me a little bit is this season we've seen you've got Tetti as the genuine defensive option, but there's not really a proper cover for him, is it? And, you know, Tribal's not really a proper defensive midfielder either, is he? If Godfrey is going to take the role of Tetti, do you think that they need to find another defensive midfielder as well then to provide that balance? Because, I mean, when Tetti's out of the team, immediately you worry, don't you?
Well, yeah, you want two for every position, don't you? So it goes without saying, is you'd want Godfrey and one other, even if it is Tetti, you never know.
Could be,
but,
yeah.
Definitely, you just see when we have three or four injuries, just the team that he's got at his disposal. I mean, I haven't even said Raggett yet, so I don't know what's going on there. Edwards, we can rule him out anyway, because he'll go back to Spurs in the summer. And he probably won't get more than, because he had 5 minutes so far. But that's never going to be an option for next season anyway. So
I missed the Fulham game. Did he have any touches of the ball?
Did he get a touch? He did.
Yeah, a couple of darts, yeah. But obviously the game was up by then, so it was all a bit, you know, try and take on a couple of men, but then ended up passing it sideways. So it's been difficult for him, really. You know, Daniel was very strident when he first came in, thought the attitude was a slight issue, and needed to grow up, I think was the phrase. Now he's obviously, by definition, the fact that he's now getting into squads on a match day, getting on the bench, and then actually getting on against Fulham, he's clearly improved in that vibe. But it's not, I suppose, as Daniel said, for Fulham, he said he'd love to be introducing him when Norwich are on the front foot and winning games, because it's a lot easier then. So you know, it, as it's as we sit here, it looks like a deal that hasn't come off. You know, it's just for one of those, they took a punt, hasn't worked, and he'll go back to sender, won't he, in the summer, and we'll see if that's the end of that.
Yeah, we'll see on Saturday against Villa. It'd be nice, even if they lose, just to see somebody give us something fresh to talk about. A Dennis Trebeni goal or Marcus Edwards give us a bit of a flash of what he can do. Just something new. I think that's what fans need, something to get their teeth into. That's why there's been so much sort of wailing on social media in the last week. I think people, there's a lot of pent-up frustration already there. So we'll have to see what Saturday brings. Right, thanks, boys. Me and Paddy will be at Carrow Road on Saturday. You can join us for the live team news video as ever at 2 o'clock. Paddy will be covering the press conference on Friday, so you can follow the updates from that at pinken.com. And then we'll be off on a long trip to Sunderland on Tuesday, and I'd imagine we'll probably record the next pod the other side of Sunderland, and Michael might be back with us by Cardiff, so we'll see how he's getting on with baby Bailey number two. Right, thanks very much for joining us. We will catch up with you again soon.